Do you swear in this one?
Yes. Yeah.
It's not on the radio.
It's not.
So that's nice.
No, I mean, literally no one's listening. Welcome to another episode of the Beer Opinions Podcast. My name is Pat Berger of Kaiser Tiger and Patty Longs, and with me, as always, is Bruce White of the Chicagoland Beer Tours. How you doing, Bruce?
Oh, man, doing well, although I will be honest, I'm feeling a bit like a traitor this week because I've got to root for my Michigan Wolverines over the Loyola Chicago Ramblers.
So typical of you being a contrarian on this podcast. You know, it's the feel-good story, the Ramblers. And as a proud alum, I hate you.
That's fair. That's fair. I will say that if you guys pull off another upset, I will not be mad. I will be,
I've heard, I have a lot of good friends who are Michigan fans. Yeah. And I've heard the same thing. Like, if we have to lose to someone. But, that's loser talk. And I encourage it on your end.
How about you? How are things?
Things are great. My Ramblers are rambling on. Final Four. It's unbelievable. Start of a program, I think, that is going to, carry on. Everything is fantastic.
That's great. Yeah.
I have to shout out to Juan Chavez, the chosen Juan down in New Orleans, who sent me a wonderful Loyola Ramblers t-shirt with Bo Rambler on the cover. For those that don't know, Bo Rambler is our old mascot at Loyola. He was just a rambling man, just riding the rails and living the life of a hobo. And apparently that was not sensitive to the homeless community in Rogers Park. Although I don't remember any of them complaining when I was there about Bo Rambler.
I mean, don't you want to have positive portrayals of people who, homeless community?
Yeah, right?
Who
are the homeless supposed to look up to? They had Bo Rambler for a long time. Now they have no one.
And maybe Bo Rambler goes to college, right? Gets a good education.
He just show up to the games and throw t-shirts to the crowd. Not sure he had a Loyola degree per se.
Okay.
But anyway, shout out to the chosen one. Thank you for the t-shirt. And
not get an honorary doctorate for being the mascot?
An honorary doctorate in hoboism?
Correct.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not, if anyone gives those out, it's probably Loyola. They gave me a degree.
You should check the fine print on that and make sure, see what it is. And,
I should. I should if I could find my degree. It's in a box somewhere. Anyway, we do have a guest, as he's already chimed in. Speaking of sports, he's wearing a magnificent St. Louis Cardinals flat brim cap because he's cool because he works for Half Acre. It is Eric Capron from Half Acre. How you doing, Eric?
Great. How are you doing, Pat?
I'm fantastic.
Bruce. Nice to meet you, Bruce.
Yeah. Likewise. Thanks for coming.
Yeah. Opening day for the baseball season. I'm excited to only talk about the Cardinals for the next couple hours.
This is a baseball podcast.
Right.
I don't know if you're prepared for that.
I am. How do you feel about the pitching rotation this season? Do you think the Cardinals have what it takes to make a real run in the Central Division?
We have had some injuries.
Of course. You can't start a season in Cardinals baseball without there being an injury to one of the pitchers.
Yes, to the main man.
3 or 4 years in a row now it's happened.
I know.
I'm excited about
Poor
the Cubs.
Poor Cardinals. I just want to put that out there.
Cubs?
Cubs.
I don't think anyone's expecting much of them this year.
Yeah. what's going on?
Basement dwellers.
You guys need to get your shit together.
They're going
to
win a World Series one of these days.
One of these days.
Maybe. They get lucky.
Hopefully it's another 108 years.
Did you grow up and feel like it would literally never happen? I think that in my mind, I couldn't fathom the idea of the Cubs actually winning a World Series because it literally seemed impossible. And in my mind, growing up in a sort of split family with Cubs and Cardinals, I kind of grew up on the dividing line in Central Illinois, where you can go into a store and they will have either Cubs or Cardinals gear, no White Sox, even though, location-wise, it's the closest team.
Right.
No one cares.
No one really cares. Pretty much past Tinley Park. No one has a Sox.
Maybe to Joliet, but that's
maybe.
That's about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. I did feel that way. I took it for granted, Eric, that they would never win a World Series. And You know, that was 2016, right? That was harder on me than I realized it would be.
Sure.
It was tough.
Good for business.
You know, that took a little bit of the sting out, making a ton of money. Sure. But some things are more important than money, Eric.
I agree.
And baseball is one of them.
I agree. Actually, on the subject, though, Wrigley Field is going to be carrying Daisy Cutter cans this year.
Oh, no my kidding. Gosh.
Yeah, we broke through. They reached out to us, and we went and met with them and sampled a bunch of beer. And they're going to be carrying Daisy Cutter and I believe Fat Tire throughout the stadium this year. Not like taking them in tubs, like through the crowd, but they'll have it a certain number of kiosks throughout the stadium. So they actually are, you know, last year when Lagunitas got in towards the end of the season, you know, it kind of was the first time that a non-AB product had been sold in there in a while, beside with the exclusion of like Old Style, which they did kind of push out. I don't know if entirely or not, but I think that they saw with the success of Lagunitas last year.
Well, I think that they saw that the feds were in town and were asking questions. Let's just, you know, get to the real reason that Daisy Cutter is in there. The feds did come to town and were like, you know, coming to bars going, hey, why are you only carrying products from this particular brewery or this particular distributor.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they had a sample of Daisy Cutter with them when they were going into these bars.
The feds?
Yeah.
Why don't you serve this beer?
That worked out. Yeah.
But needless to say, a glaring example of pay to play in the beer world was Wrigley Field and Soldier Field and, you know,
right.
Sox Park actually came out a couple years ago with a whole bunch of different beers and blew it all wide open. And, you know, it's nice to get, although I think I am going to stick to my Budweiser's at the ball game because, well, I like to drink one an inning and I don't think one Daisy Cutter an inning is going to do well for me.
I will say I like the relatively low ABV of Daisy Cutter. I think that'll go well with baseball.
It's not that low.
It's five two.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
It's not too bad. I mean, you get into you've talked about this, the IPAs, and you start to get a little too much. I think for a hot 90-degree August day.
Sure.
But Daisy Cutter will be great.
Yeah. I always like. So they sell they also sell Daisy Cutter at United Center right down the road, and I always start every game I go to like with a good beer because I'll go get it, grab it, like take the time before the game starts. And once the game starts, like you pay good money to be there. You don't want to get up and go seek out.
Totally. And I mean, I've got vendors at Wrigley Field who depend on me to put their kids through college.
Right.
And if I start getting up for my beers, they're going to, you know, there'll be a backlash.
You're doing it really not for you. You're doing it for the world.
You know, people depend on me, Bruce.
Yeah.
As much as I hate the Cubs, I really do love Wrigley Field. It is a beautiful park and a wonderful place to see a game. And I can't wait to get back out there this year. It's going to be, and I will definitely make room for a Daisy Cutter. Is it going to be 16 ounce cans, draft? What are they?
16 ounce cans.
And what do they cost? $27?
That I don't know.
Curious.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
That's, you know, I think that, we're in a unique situation where, you know, we're just selling them the beer full price. What they price it at, I have no idea. But we're not doing any like programming with them necessarily where we're like, you know, sponsoring a section of the stadium or like certain, you know, we're just like, they want to buy it. They're local. You know, for years before I was in sales, I was running our social media and doing some marketing and events and stuff like that for the brewery. And every year when baseball season started, we would just get people hounding us. Why don't you carry Daisy Cutter or Half Acre Beer at Wrigley Field? It's less than a mile away. And it's like, that's not our decision. Like if they want to buy the beer, they're more than welcome to. So when they reached out and wanted to bring it in this year, I was really excited about it.
Good. Now they need a Chicago hot dog in there because I'm tired of that kosher best crap.
Do they have like a couple stands, but they're hard to find, right? Or are they not
for Vienna beef or what?
Oh, maybe it's not Vienna beef. That's what. Okay.
Well, anyway, yeah. I would take any of the local Chicago hot dogs over the fucking bullshit hot dog they have at Wrigley Field. It doesn't matter for them because they're packed all the time.
Right. Yeah.
So
it's the biggest bar in Chicago.
Yeah.
It is. It is.
All right.
So yeah, I feel comfortable talking about it finally because they literally brought beer in from us yesterday. And I was like, this is really happening. I really feel like this is something that they've been wanting to do for years now. But they finally pulled the trigger. And I'm hoping that they see that, you know, I think that there's a big segment of the people attending games that want to drink something that's a little more premium, that's a little nicer. No offense to any of the other beers or breweries that they carry, but I think people.
You mean the other brewery that they carry?
Right, the other brewery.
No offense to the other brewery.
Right.
but there are some other breweries.
People like selection. I mean, every year I want to call it the Cell, but it's the Guaranteed Rate Feel. Like people have called it the G Spot, which I don't know about that nickname.
I have trouble finding the G Spot. Is it on the south side?
Yeah, it's down by Maria's.
Okay.
Yeah.
My wife's always like, you know, you don't know where the G Spot is. And we've been driving around in circles.
Yeah, they don't
but,
have that.
You know, the south side, it's not familiar to me. This is going way downhill.
Yeah,
here.
Well, they do. I think
we're supposed to be talking about beer.
I think the good thing is that the White Sox have illustrated that people do care about drinking better beer at the stadium.
They have, right? Yeah,
and it's been extremely successful for them. And even though they haven't been filling the stands as much as they would like to, you know, they still sell a lot more beer than I ever would have imagined. So
that's awesome.
You guys are in there too.
We're in there too. Yeah, I don't know, in kiosks, and I think in the Craft Cave too. We were on draft last year, but it just came out this week that Revolution has got like a whole sponsorship deal with them, and all of a sudden our handles disappeared. I wonder if that's related, probably, but that is what it is. So
well,
we're excited to have our place there, regardless.
Good, awesome, good,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, it's another tap room opening.
Well, it's called Sox Social.
Right? Sox Social. Yeah, right. That's it.
Good. So I was curious, like, kind of going to just start off by going into kind of how you got involved in craft beer and Half Acre and what your personal journey was to get into this magical industry.
So I mentioned this earlier. I grew up in Central Illinois. So I was in the no man's land of craft beer for the longest time, pretty much only drinking Budweiser with my friends. Came to Chicago to visit one time and someone gave me a Blue Moon and I was like, this is amazing. And then the next time I came up, we went to Binny's and got Le Fin de Mon and I was like, oh man, this is crazy. There's so many different flavors in this beer. And all this time I was like working in manufacturing, making cookie dough, making fuel injectors, just kind of doing whatever jobs. Decided to like go to college and was working in an office at the time. And Medici, which has a bar in Chicago by UIC, also opened up a restaurant in Bloomington Normal where I was going to college. And I went in there one night, had some pizza and had Dark Horse Crooked Tree. And it was the first IPA or hoppy beer I had had. And I just couldn't believe that beer could taste like that. I just didn't ever equate those flavors to beer. So I was then on a hunt to try every single IPA that I possibly could. The selection at the liquor stores down there was okay at best at the time. And one weekend I was visiting my girlfriend in Chicago. We went on a bike ride. We went to Paulina Meat Market. Got some sausages and some steaks, and we heard someone talking about a brewery up the street up Lincoln Avenue, so we biked up Lincoln to Half Acre, and I'd never been to a brewery before, and someone was working the shop. I want to say it was Gabriel. This was in 2010. Walked in the shop and it just smelled like weed, like crazy. And I was like, oh man, someone has really good weed on them. And
shame on them.
Yeah. And I missed that smell.
Stop to this right now.
And it wasn't even weed. It was beer. It was Daisy Cutter that they were pouring. And it might've even been Double Daisy Cutter too. And I just never had a beer that tasted like that much like pot. And I hadn't smoked weed in a long time. And I was like, if I can ingest something that tastes like pot, but doesn't get me all high and weird and awkward, then I'm all for that.
Yeah, beer doesn't get you awkward or weird.
No, I mean, yeah, it does other things. So basically from then on, I was obsessed with Daisy Cutter. And then a few months later, I graduated and moved up here. And I'd mentioned, you know, having manufacturing background. They posted on Twitter that they needed someone to do unglamorous work, like, you know, use a pallet jack to move kegs around, to clean, to work on a packaging line. And I had lived up here for like maybe a week tops. And I went in and talked to Gabriel, who founded Half Acre. And he was like, yeah, dude, do you want to work here? Like, sure, go for it. And I was like, yeah, I do, because I have no idea what I'm going to do. I'm living in Chicago with a fresh degree and amount of student loan debt. And I just wanted to help. I was an idealist. I just wanted to help build a small company. And Half Acre at the time, there was maybe 10 employees. There was, you know, three or four brewers, three or four guys in packaging and cellaring, and then a few people working in the storefront. And that was it. I mean, that was the entire company. And they were on top of brewing and cellaring. They were also running the business, you know, doing the books, doing sales and distribution work. There, like a lot of people were wearing a lot of hats at the time. And, you know, me and a couple other guys starting out at that time, we allowed them to be freed up to do more of the business side of things, and we could do the grunt work. So worked in packaging for the first few years at Half Acre, and kind of evolved from there.
That's awesome.
That's a very long-winded answer. No, I apologize.
No, I think that's awesome. I think it's good to
makes our job easy when you just go on and on.
All right, good. Yeah, so that was back in 2011. The company was a lot different then than it is now. So,
yeah, what's the difference? Just because I consider Half Acre kind of one of the new generation, the first of the new generation of breweries. Before that time, I mean, I would probably put Metropolitan and Revolution in that category as well. You know, just to kind of put things in perspective, how much have you grown since those days, like in terms of any metric that you can think of?
Sure. I think in 2011, we made about 7,000 barrels of beer that year. And in 2017, we made 45,000 barrels of beer. So it's 600% growth.
I'll be honest, even 7,000 coming out of that original little brewery is pretty amazing. I mean, it was like a 10 or 15 barrel system.
15 barrel.
15 barrel.
Yeah, and we still use that system for beers for our tap room.
Right.
At one point, when we maxed out that facility in, I believe, 2012 and 2013, we had all the fermenters that we could possibly fit in there. There was not a square foot that was not being used for something. We were making 15,000 barrels there. And that was like, everyone was on top of each other all the time. We, you know, worked, one of the guys who started the company, his name is Matt Gallagher. He had an engineering background, and, you know, when you start a company, you kind of plan things out. You're like, oh, well, you know, we'll make like 5,000 barrels of beer annually in, you know, 10 years. And then, you know, year two, year three, you're like, you know, blown past that. You have no idea that that's going to come. And you're like, oh shit, well, we need to be able to get the pallet jack or the forklift from the, you know, the back of the brewery to the front, because we have a delivery of grain or something like that. But there's a bunch of hoses and pallets of cans and, you know, all this stuff in the way. You have to, you know, get kind of crafty and, you know, running some hard piping, which is very expensive, just to make it to where you're not always having to stop production to move a truck. And I don't know. It's changed a lot. We've grown a whole bunch, what I feel like is a relatively short period of time, but I'm grateful that they've done it in like a calculated way, where it's not like we're going to go from 10,000 barrels to 100,000 barrels of beer, like right now, because at some point you have to turn a switch and figure out where you're going to sell all that beer. And, you know, it's a crowded market now. So I think we got in right at the right time. But now we're kind of looked at as like the grandfathers of beer in Chicago. And we, you know, we're 10, 11 years old at this point.
Yeah. I have to say, I missed the boat on Half Acre when they came out. I was brought some samples, and, this is before you were with the company, but they started out as a contract brewery. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Out of Stevens Point, I believe. Yeah.
And that's what it tasted like. And it wasn't good. It was terrible.
Sure.
And I kind of dismissed it. And then maybe a year later, you know, I had a Daisy Cutter somewhere. I was like, damn, this is really, really good, you know, and called up, you know, the distributor to get some. And at that point, it was all allocated. And I had to wait. I had to wait a while before before they would sell me any beer. And, you know, that's what isn't going to happen again in the near future is that meteoric rise. You know, no one's going to be able to start up small like that and, you know, suddenly, just like you said, I mean, 7,000 barrels to 45,000 barrels. That's, you know, Revolution did it and you guys did it. And I think it's the era of people being able to do that is kind of over, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. It's you really have to either you have to you know, when as you grow like that, if you supply too much of the beer, you're going to lose a little bit of your rub. I'm interested to see. So Treehouse Brewing out in Massachusetts, they only sell beer in cans on their own premise. Is my understanding. So if I'm wrong, I apologize. But they're about to grow into making over 30,000 barrels of beer. And, you know, if the lines persist.
And they sell it all right there, huh?
All of it on their own, out their own door. So if they continue to grow and the supply never hits the demand, like, good for them. But I think they're in, like, a very unique situation where you can grow and you might not ever hit the true demand for your product. Because if they all of a sudden we're like, we're making 100,000 barrels of beer and we're going to ship it to, you know, 20 states. Be like, ah, I see it on the shelf.
Then they would have to ship it because no one's going to show up and wait in line for it anymore if they can go to their local grocery store.
It's almost like a bigger example of that here is New Glarus, which, you know, New Glarus beer, I really like New Glarus beer, but I don't know what percentage of that is just because I can't get it. You know, like there is that kind of aspect where you're like, which they don't distribute in Illinois, like anytime I go to Wisconsin, I'm like, oh, I better check this out because I know I can't get it there. But if they distributed here, it'd probably be much less of a thing, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. And I mean, they would lose all the bootlegging sales, which I think are probably pretty significant at, you know, the Mars Cheese Castle and Woodman's and all of that. I mean, I certainly always pick it up. But, you know, they're one of the few breweries that I think could expand and probably find success because they have so many untapped markets. Mm-hmm. And their beer really is good because I, you know, people bring it to me all the time and it's always some varieties I've never had because I don't make it up there too often. And it almost never ceases to amaze me how good it is. You know, I mean, they really make good beer at New Glarus. It's not bullshit. It's not a marketing thing, you know?
Right, right.
It is really, really good.
Yeah. And like for the most part, it's lagers and...
That's what most people bring me. Yeah. Lagers.
Wonder why Pat likes it. I don't know.
I think that, you know, they kill it in the summer because let's say you're a Fib and you're driving from Chicago to your lake house in Wisconsin and you're going to be hanging out on the boat or on the lake or on the beach or whatever for the weekend up there. First thing you're going to want to do is drink something that's nice and refreshing on a summer day. And it's, you know, going to be a lager.
Yeah, right.
But a tasty lager is preferable. And they excel at that. And they make like three or four different ones at a time. And I'm not going to complain at all.
Yeah. Yeah. When are you inviting us up to the lake house, Pat?
I have a lake house. I don't, but I am going up to Milwaukee next week.
Okay.
Awesome. Going to, the Sleep concert. It's, I don't know. Yeah, it's a metal band. Very sludgy. Me and Jay from the Map Room and Matt from Lagunitas. So I'm sure no beers will be drank that evening.
Yeah. So you like to go to those straight cold sober, I'm sure.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's almost fun.
Yeah. Sleep. I think they're a straight edge band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not.
No. No. Definitely don't have pot leaves on all their album covers.
Yeah. I believe their number one album is called Dope Smoker. So.
Right. Oh man.
And I'm just one 45 minute song. And that is not a lie.
Yeah.
No, that's it's true, not exaggeration.
Right? Yeah. Should be fun.
Yeah.
All right. All of that being said, let's talk about the expansion that happened it's probably been 2 years now the new brewery's open?
We started brewing up there in 2015.
All right, almost 3 years.
Yeah.
On Balmoral.
Right.
In the Bauman neighborhood. We had Jason Klein on last week from Spiteful. You guys are right next door.
We're literally neighbors.
Literally.
All that separates us is an alley.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. It's really nice.
I'm just going to hang out in that alley.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah. I'm not going to either tap room. I'm just going to
take
just bounce back and forth.
Drink a six-pack in the alley.
Your Loyola roots and just, you know, living the alley, rambling out.
That's insensitive to the homeless population, Bruce. I won't stand for it. the new brewery is huge. I mean, it's a big space,
right?
With lots of room for expansion. The last time I was there, anyway, there was still a lot of open space, a lot less than the first time I was there. But
sure.
Tell us a little bit about the capabilities there, what's coming out of there, what's happening, and all that good stuff.
Yeah. So there are, I mean, I could probably talk for the next hour about all the benefits of having the new space. It being, you know, seeing as I worked for 4 years at the original smaller space where there was no room for anything ever. And you were just like literally working, you know, shoulder to shoulder with somebody all the time. You know, the unsexy stuff that we have up there that we're really excited about. We have a loading dock so trucks can pull in and out. We don't have to jump on the back of a semi trailer with a pallet jack to move a 2,000-pound pallet of grain from the front of the truck to the back. So a forklift can load it. We can just drive right on and off. Like I said, it's not sexy or glamorous, but from a logistical standpoint and a manufacturing standpoint, that's huge time saver for us.
Our listeners can't wait to see that on the tour.
Yeah, I know.
Where's that loading dock, Eric?
I point it out every time, and at that point, their eyes are glazed over, and they're like, "Can we please just go to the bathroom?" And I'm like, "Yeah, we're heading that way. I promise."
After another 10 minutes,
right? Exactly. Now I'm gonna talk about the lab. Now you're really gonna get excited about this part. Our QA QC program. No, I mean, you know, the ability to have space for a lab and test our beer has been great. We have a lot more space for cold storage. And yeah, we have a brand new shiny Browcon four vessel brewing system that we use that we really like. And it makes really good, really clean, really consistent beer. Our efficiencies have gone way up with having less of a raw piece of equipment to brew on. And yeah, we have room for expansion and growth, which again, we never had before. We kind of were maxed out at 15,000 barrels. And now we can, I think eventually that at that space we could brew upwards of 80,000 barrels of beer annually, if not a little more, depending on how you know, how many like lagers versus ales we made. So,
wow, that's a lot of beer.
Yeah,
yeah. Eventually, if we want to, we don't have the tanks in there for that capacity just yet, but we have room to add them in. So, yeah.
How many states are you guys in now?
We sell beer full time in 4 states: so Illinois, all of Illinois, about half of Wisconsin, New York City and some of upstate New York, and then Philadelphia and parts of that. But we do some like temporary distribution in places like California. We send beer to like 3 or 4 times a year. Denver a couple times. We usually do Boston once or twice. And then we just started doing like quarterly drops in New Jersey. So 4 full-time and then a bunch like just part-time on the side, I guess.
Yeah.
Is there any particular reason why it was the East Coast that was the next kind of zone or
yeah. Philadelphia is a, you know, very avid beer drinking town that the two guys who started the company, Matt and Gabriel, they grew up in right by the New Jersey Pennsylvania border. Yeah. So, you know, the name of Half Acre comes from Devil's Half Acre, which is a state park out there in New Jersey. So, you know, they grew up and spent a lot of time in Philadelphia as youths. And, you know, I think they saw that the beer culture there is really much further along than it was in Chicago. And they had a relationship with a guy at a distributor out there. So when we were finally able to make enough beer for the city of Chicago, we said, why not send a little to Philly and see how it goes? And they've been very receptive to us. So
that's awesome.
So yeah, that's why the East Coast makes a lot of sense. And honestly, you know, New York City, as big of a town as it is, there are not a lot of breweries there.
Too expensive to set up a brewery in this in wide swaths of that city, I would assume. Yeah.
Whereas on the West Coast, there's a lot of breweries. So
yeah.
Yeah.
I have to give you a shout out. I was actually took the Chicago Beer Experience tour guides up. We had our holiday party up at the new Balmoral facility, had some dinner up there, and we had a great time. And it's a beautiful facility. So thank you, and definitely recommend checking it out.
You're welcome. I had nothing to do with that, but I'm glad it worked out.
Just take the credit.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, no problem. Yeah. I got you.
Now, and then you, in your kind of current position in sales,
right.
What kind of have you noticed? We were kind of chatting a little offline about how, and we've talked about this numerous times, that the competition, there's just more and more breweries opening up in Chicago. Like, what has changed kind of in your opinion over time?
Yeah, there's a lot more breweries selling really good beer, you know, locally than there ever, you know, it'll continue to grow in this way. But, you know, 5 years ago when I would go into a bar and be like, hi, I'm Eric, I'm from right up the street at Half Acre, they would be like, oh yeah, I know where you guys are. That's great. You guys are the most local brewery. Of course, let's bring your beer in. Let's do this. And now I'm like, hey, I'm Eric from Half Acre. We got beer up the street. You're like, you guys buy Dovetail or Beguile or Spiteful? Uh-huh. You know, it's like, we're not the only local guy anymore. So I think that's changed a lot. I think that on the bar side, what's changed a lot is a lot of bars have shifted away from, like, you know, a stuck line where you would go in and you would sell a keg of Daisy Cutter, and they would keep that Daisy Cutter line running, you know, ad nauseum for forever and ever. Or, you know, you got an IPA line or something like that, long term, it meant so much. But a lot of bars have moved away from that and want to try a new keg every time on every line. There aren't as many of those beers where things or bars where things don't rotate all that much. And I think that's, you know, just as much to do with people drinking beer. They always want to try something new. They always want to have a new experience. Whether or not Untappd has anything to do with that, I don't know. But, you know, I was talking to a guy at a bar a couple of weeks ago, and he mentioned he only likes to drink a new beer every single time. And I was like, well, what do you buy? Like, what do you take home? He's like, oh, I just go to like a crap beer bar and I'll try like 8 different things. And then that's what I drink. I'm like, oh, okay.
He'll grow out of it. I mean, honestly. Plus, you know, I don't understand that, because, like, what happens when you have something that you really like? You're like, sure. Oh, that was one of the best beers I've ever had. I'm never going to have it again.
On to what's new.
Yeah.
I mean, and Sam Calagione talked about this in one of his books, where he's like, you know, the crap beer fan, the crap beer consumer, whatever you want to call them, they're not. They have no brand loyalty whatsoever.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's a really big part of this. And I think that if you mess up or you make something that people aren't that into, like if someone's first beer experience is with a beer that's like old or out of code or he doesn't taste that great, they're going to move on and they're probably never going to come back to you. So what I did for the first probably year of selling beer in Chicago was trying to repair the relationship of us having out of stock issues and our beer always running out at the distributor. And convincing people, like, hold tight, we make good beer, you want it, we appreciate it, and I'm not gonna try to sell you anything that's not gonna run out, because for a long time we would, you know, package an entire tank of Daisy Cutter and ship it to the distributor, and then the next day we'd get the inventory back and it would say zero, that they had like sold through all the beer like that fast. And that was kind of discouraging at the time. And everyone says, like, oh, it's a good problem to have to sell everything and the demand being what it is. And it's like, that's true. But when a bar is counting, you know, when a bar has a draft line that has nothing pouring on it, that's making them zero money. It's mm-hmm. probably costing them money. No one wants that. You want to make the people who sell your beer happy and not run out of beer. So,
yeah, you know, those... That was a big issue 5 years ago with a lot of breweries, and it's not an issue anymore.
Yeah.
It's very rare that I get out of stock something. And I used to have my delivery day scheduled around the Three Floyds drop at the distributor, you know? So sure. we ordered on Wednesdays at Patty Long's because Glenn's got the beer on Tuesday.
Gotcha.
And then it made it into the inventory on Wednesday.
Sure.
And I would get first, you know, I'd be, because they would, that happened to with Three Floyds for years, you know, where it would drop on Tuesday, it would be gone on Thursday. And if you didn't order those days, you didn't get any.
And has that changed for them? Do you feel like in the last year for the Three Floyds?
I think so. I mean, I don't have any, knowledge of it. I don't get out of stock except around Dark Lord Day anymore.
Sure.
And even when I get out of stock around Dark Lord Day, I still they still send me something.
Sure.
Dark Lord Day, by the way, is Three Floyds big, for those listeners who don't know. It's their big festival. And they literally have to hoard their beer for like the month beforehand because they sell so much beer
right
at Dark Lord Day.
Well, I bet that beer takes up a lot of tank time too.
Yeah.
The Dark Lord itself does. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's more like, you know, them having enough kegs for the festival.
Sure.
So they can't ship it to the distributor.
Right.
But yeah, no, outside of that, we're flush in it.
Sure. I mean, they're one of the 50 biggest breweries in America. It's independent.
They are.
That's, yeah. To me, that's crazy.
They, you know, I everyone never, still thinks they're small because it's kind of scarce.
Sure.
But they, I don't think they're that small.
No.
I think, you know, I don't know, maybe 60,000 barrels a year or something like that.
That'd be my guess. Yeah. Yeah,
it's a lot.
That 15,000 barrel gap between us and them, like that's a big one. That's really big.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, as you grow those numbers, like you're never, it's unlikely at this point in the industry that you're going to have 100% growth 5 years in a row. It's just, unless you're tiny, you know, you get above like 15,000 barrels, that's going to be a lot harder to come by. So, you know, I think that they're in five states, and they're probably filling the pipeline for the first time ever. And the demand for them is, I always say that they're the exception to the rule.
They're one of the exceptions. You know, there's a few of them out there. And you know, again, a good problem to have, right? But
sure,
you know, they also have a big expansion coming up. Right. So, I imagine they'll be in some more states soon.
Sure. Yeah, they don't even ship beer to downstate Illinois.
Really?
Yeah.
I know there's parts of Indiana that doesn't get it either. That's their home sure. state.
Right.
But, you know, soon they will, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But let's get back to Half Acre.
Sure.
You guys have the original tap room on Lincoln.
Right.
With, you know, really nice food there. It's burritos and it's Mexican food, right? Not tacos, but burritos mostly, right?
I mean, it's mostly burritos. We have not, you know, nachos, and we do, I would say, a creative burrito program where it's not something you're going to find at like a little Mexican food stand in their burrito.
Burrito fusion.
Sure. That sounds so bad.
Not.
So, I mean, going, you know, when I started at the brewery, we didn't have that tap room, and, you know, a concept that Gabriel talked about at the time was Betcha Can't Burrito. And it's like, what should not be in a burrito? And let's see if we can make it and have it taste, you know, taste good. And I think that something about that idea transformed into what our food program is now. So,
and now with the new tap room on Balmora, you've really stepped up the food game. I mean, you know, I ate there recently. It was fantastic. And it's really a more of a traditional, you know, better than average pub food, kind of a gastro pub sort of food menu.
Sure. I'd say it's closer to a restaurant.
Right.
Up there. I get that comment a lot. And I think that one of the big differences between the two is people can bring their kids into the Balmoral space because we, you know, it's kind of like the brewing side of it. It's like we have more room now. So, you know, people can bring in kids and it's definitely more family friendly. Whereas at Lincoln, it's just a small space. We can only seat 60 people, you know, and it's loud in there. But Balmoral, the food program up there, it's really great. They have we have a full-time bread maker who, you know, it's a lot of bread driven stuff. So we got that going, and that's been really nice to have.
You guys are working on outdoor space up there?
Yeah, we've got a we opened last year in September, and the, you know, the patio only got like a few weeks before it turned cold. So this year will be the first time that we have like a full-time patio in the summertime, which is
it in the back? Because
it's in the parking lot.
In the parking lot, okay.
Right. So we'll try to make it look less like it's just sitting in a parking lot. and I think that they're gonna have a food program and beer as well that's exclusive just to the patio. Whereas right now, and as it gets warmer over the next few months, if you have a beer in the tap room, you'll just take it outside, and we'll have like full service out there, which will be nice.
Yeah, just like that's a restaurant.
Awesome. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it is a lot like a restaurant.
That's awesome.
So we have to bring it up because we were a little, we used you guys as an example quite a bit on the episode with Mike Roper, where we talked about tap rooms and stuff. And, you know, his concern is that a lot of these tap rooms are just like restaurants and becoming direct competitors with what he's doing, I guess, what with what I'm doing. And What is your guys' take on that? Are you worried about biting the hand that feeds you, basically? Because, you know, when you're selling 45,000 barrels a year, obviously 99% of that is not in your own tap room.
Right? Sure.
Does that, do you guys have any concerns?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've always been on the sales side of it, and I've been the Northside sales rep. So I've been selling in our, you know, in our home territory. You know, and I think some of the ramifications from that for me have been trying to run a successful event within a few miles of the brewery. It's really challenging because if people want to try, you know, you do a six tap takeover at a restaurant or at a bar, people are like, well, I could just go drink 10 half acre beers right down the street. I don't have to buy a ticket, you know? So, you know, it's been a challenge to sell beer in our home market to some degree.
So you're getting pushback from bars as far as
a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've raised our prices to not undercut anybody. That was a change we made in the past few years. We're definitely not trying to put anyone under, or out of business or anything like that by any means. So, it's definitely something I pay attention to. I mean, the corner at Lincoln there's three restaurants, all catty corner from each other, you know, Wild Goose, Bad Apple, and Gannon's. We've always had good relationships with them. They've always been our neighbors. And even as we opened up our tap room added our kitchen a couple of years ago, we were very conscious of trying to not necessarily, you know, compete with them, doing completely different food, you know, doing a completely different vibe. And the fact that our tap room space is relatively small, and it's usually at capacity most nights and on weekends especially. So my hope is that we've been able to benefit the neighborhood and benefit these places that are nearby more than, you know, compete with them and hurt their business. But as you get further down the road, you know, places that are in proximity but aren't necessarily next door, I like to think that the locality is a good thing. But I also, pardon me, I can understand where, you know, that might, I guess in some way, shape or form we're competing, but I like to think that we're working in harmony to sell good beer that's made locally, you know. Yeah.
Good burger at Bad Apple.
Yeah.
It's really complicated. There's it not is like complicated. A perfect it is answer complicated. Right. that I can yeah. give either.
And I've always, you know, sort of, you know, pointed out to craft beer people, because the craft beer community is one of cooperation and helping each other out. And, you know, people are generally friends who are direct competitors and all that. And I, you know, I always tell these people, like, you know, it's not like that in the bar world, you know, like, it was, you know, I try to be friendly with all the other bar owners, but they're not always, you know, sometimes I walk into a bar, you know, close to Patty Long's or something, and the owner doesn't greet me with a, hey, Pat, how's it going? He greets me with a, what are you doing here? You know?
Sure. Yeah.
You know, are you trying to check out my new menu? You're trying to do, right. You know, you're trying to steal something? What are you doing? You know? And we've never had that, you know, camaraderie. People are always like, what, you know, there's a brewer's guild. Why don't you guys have a bar guild? It's like, because none of us can stand to be in the same room together. You know, we're just not a cooperative group of people. We're, but, you know, all of that aside, I know Half Acre has been a big proponent of changing some taproom laws. So the big one, I think, for you guys was when you opened up Balmoral, you realized that there was a law prohibiting you from shipping beer between your two breweries.
Correct.
So you couldn't serve Daisy. If all the Daisy Cutter was now being made at the new brewery, you couldn't literally have your flagship beer at the original taproom, right?
Right. Yeah, we could only serve beer made at each location.
Right. So they, as in, I think, the Brewers Guild,
right,
got together and drafted a new law that allowed you guys to ship beer between your two breweries.
Right.
And it makes sense, right? I mean, we all, when that happened, I was like, well, sure. You know, that makes sense to me. That's good law. I'm glad they passed that. Then I realized that, you know, that law can be kind of taken advantage of by some other people, mainly, you know, the bigger breweries like, say, Anheuser-Busch, who were trying to figure out what to do with Goose Island Clybourne, because Goose Island Clybourne was a brew pub. For those of you who don't know, a brew pub is a different license that is more akin to a liquor license and is subject to different rules. One of them being, if you are a brewery that makes more than, I want to say 30,000 barrels a year, I don't know, there's some number, you can't hold a brew pub license. A brew pub license also enables you to sell other people's beer and liquor and, you know, operate just like any other bar that just happens to make its own beer. So they didn't know what to do with Clybourne. They couldn't legally own it. And it wasn't in the original sale to Anheuser-Busch from the Hall family. And then you guys changed that law and they went, well, now we can reopen as a tap room. And we can have 312 there and beer that, you know, pretty much any Anheuser-Busch product they can have there, including Goose Island beers being made at Fulton Street. So problem solved, right? Now, you know, I heard you guys and Revolution, some other people said, well, you know, we want to serve other people's beer. We want to have collaborative events with other breweries, you know, or we made a collaboration beer with, you know, like this beautiful beer we're drinking right now from that you made with Tired Hands.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing this.
Yeah, it really is nice, by the way. It's a lager. He knows me. and you said, well, you know, we want to be able to serve this beer and have a tapping at our pub. And I thought to myself, that makes sense too. You know, like, of course you should. And, you know, that law got changed. And or is in the process of being changed.
Yeah, it hasn't been changed.
Sorry, it hasn't been changed yet.
Right.
But that is up for change, and you will be able to serve other people's beer. And they also put in a little rider in there for cider because,
right.
You know, you guys said, well, we also do collaborations with ciders.
Well,
right?
Cideries. I think the big part of that getting, I don't know this for sure because I really don't have anything to do with this part of it. But I would imagine that has to do with, you know, someone coming in who has, you know, celiacs or is gluten-free or whatever and wants to drink, but they, you know, we only have beer that all has gluten in it. We're like, you know, tough shit. Sorry, here's some coffee.
Well, so, you know, there is something to be said for a celiac going to a brewery. Maybe they shouldn't.
Yeah. That's fair.
I mean,
so one of my,
you know, I'm just saying,
yeah.
If I was allergic to wine, I probably wouldn't go visit a winery.
Sure.
And that makes sense to me. Now, I'm just bringing this up because,
you're with friends or you're with family that like, you know, wine.
Well,
God forbid, you got to go there.
You don't have to. It's not an inalienable right that you have to be able to go everywhere. You know, that is not a thing. I'm sorry. But let me finish my point.
Okay.
So, you know, it makes sense, right? You do a collaboration with, say, you know, the wonderful people at Right Bee Cider here in Chicago, and you guys make some kind of beer cider hybrid or something. And you want to be able to serve that as well. But cider is technically a wine. So you are now able to serve wine. So now the only restriction a tap room has is liquor,
right? For now, I'm just
for
kidding.
Now, right?
Yeah. I'm just kidding.
Well, until you make a collaboration, you know, thing with a distillery, and then
sure,
and then that changes, and there sure. becomes zero difference. And you know, I'm not saying this is like a terrible thing, and you know, the sky's gonna fall. But what I am slowly getting to is it opens the door for a lot of other breweries to come into town. Namely, you know, it's already happened with Jolly Pumpkin, right? And
sure.
with Ballast Point, they're opening soon. There's nothing stopping, say, a Sierra Nevada or a New Belgium or a, you know, a Pilsner or Kell, you know, or a Blue Moon or a Miller or a Bud Bar. Or any of these things from opening now, because now they can get their beer from their big breweries and they can make, you know, a batch every month and call themselves a tap room.
Mm-hmm.
Are you afraid that maybe these law changes might bite you in the ass and suddenly you're competing with people with way deeper pockets than you?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, you can't not be afraid of the guys with the big checkbooks. They have a lot of benefits at their disposal that we don't. What I don't know, and I'm just gonna be completely honest here. I don't know. Does that like for Ballast Point, who's opening up here soon,
yeah,
or for, you know, for Goose, the Goose Island, Clybourne space, does their beer have to go through distribution before?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So there's another party who are missing out on, you know, the money being generated by tap rooms, and that's the distributors.
Sure.
Because you guys are cutting them out by selling your beer, you know, straight to the consumer. So the distributor is going, well, hey, I like this law. Now they got to buy their beer from me, you know, from the other brewery, and they got to buy the cider from me, and they got to buy the wine from me, you know. So they're all like, yeah, let's shove this through, you know.
Right.
Let's get it going on because we're losing money.
Yep.
You know, so the distributor is going to benefit greatly from a Budweiser bar.
Right.
That only serves Budweiser product.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And maybe makes, you know, some weird beers on their little tiny system.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the beer they're selling is, you know, coming from St. Louis.
Right. Or any number of
Or the other 14 breweries they have in the country, whatever.
They're basically a neighborhood brewery.
Yeah. Bud Gold. Right? What is the, yeah.
They are, right? Yeah, you know, they're the largest neighborhood brewery in the world.
Right.
But, I'm not that upset about all of this. I don't think that, you know, competition for me is ongoing and, you know, not really something I concern myself with. But I think it's going to maybe cannibalize your guys' business.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that you're probably looking at a pretty different group of people going to either one, and I don't know that, you know, I mean, Goose Island having a location, you know, they have their Fulton Avenue or their Fulton Market or whatever brewery, Fulton and Wood, and they've got the.
Do you think you're getting a vast different clientele than those places at your taproom?
I guess not. I mean, I'd be interesting to see like how this evolves. I don't know that it's going to like put us out of a business necessarily, though. I think that
I don't think anyone's going out of business.
Sure.
Well, some people are, but
I don't necessarily think that, you know, as our, you know, our Lincoln, you were talking earlier about how us as a brewery, like we used to be like these new guys and now we're like the grandfathers, like our tap room is one of the oldest ones in the city now too. So it's like, you know, we're trying to be competitive as a tap room, just as much as like any bar restaurant is, with the, you know, exception of like Lincoln just fills in and it's a small space and we're going to be fine. But I don't necessarily see other tap rooms like Off Color or Metropolitan opening up as a bad thing whatsoever.
No, but those are local breweries, right? With local street cred.
Sure.
You know, and these other, you know, people like New Belgium and Sierra and the big craft breweries are losing out big time to local breweries.
Sure.
You know, and so how do they combat that? They become local.
Right.
I mean, Lagunitas did it on a very big scale here in Chicago.
Exactly.
That's
what I was thinking of.
You know, opened a giant brewery on the south side and became Chicago's local brewery, literally. And, you know, I just can't imagine these other breweries aren't looking at that and going, well, we can do that on a small scale, suddenly be, you know, the local brewery around town and get in people's minds, get in the consumer's mind that they're drinking a local product.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's probably more likely. Well, I shouldn't say that. I was going to say that it's more likely that those kind of larger craft breweries, which the Sierras of the world, sorry to pick on Sierra, I've never done this, so I don't know why, but the Constellations, which is not really that, but it's kind of similar in a way. But then again, Anheuser-Busch is opening Goose Islands all around the world.
Right.
So they're also obviously interested in this.
Yeah. Yeah, and they do a nice business here in Chicago.
Yeah,
I mean, it makes all the sense in the world to me,
mm-hmm,
for these guys to look at the law changes in Illinois and go, "Hey, why would we not do this?"
The,
you know,
unintentional consequences of chipping away at the three-tiered model. I mean, that's really what it boils down to.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. You know, and I've never been a huge fan of the three-tiered system, but it is there for a reason.
Sure.
And it is. There's so many holes in it now.
Yeah. But I look at other markets and see how they've evolved. You know, in California, Stone exists in all three. Like they have a distributor, they have multiple tap rooms, and they have their multiple production breweries, you know, and it's not like people are motherfucking stone in California.
Right. No, they aren't.
They're like, you know, but I don't, they're like, well, we sell a lot of beer through them. Like it's great, you know?
Right. Right.
So, you know,
I don't know how they got that distributorship.
It's legal over there. Modern Times has one too.
Oh, really?
They exist in all three tiers as well.
Yeah. So. I mean, you know, it's legal here. If you are a self-distributed brewery, you
exactly.
can have a tap room and you right. can obviously also make beer.
Right.
Yeah, so there's lots of breweries in Chicago
totally.
that that have all three.
Yep.
There's size restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it's happening quite often.
Right.
I mean, and the sky isn't falling. I'm just, right. you know, I'm just pointing these things out.
Sure. I completely understand where you're coming from. And what I think a lot about in all this for us, for everybody from production side to tap room to bar and restaurant, everything is, you know, you have to evolve and, mm-hmm. and change, and you can't just, you know, become complacent and expect that the world isn't going to change around you. You have to adapt.
True.
I look at Longroom as an example. See, so in my mind as a sales rep, and when I think of Wednesday calling on bars, I think of Patty Long's and Longroom on the north side, because you guys both meet on Wednesdays in the early afternoon. So usually on a day where I would take a sample to Patty Long's, I would then go to Longroom. Longroom was our business there was flat, if not declining slightly, for a few reasons. And I just don't think that they were as busy as that they would have liked to have been. And they, added a coffee bar component. They added a restaurant to the side of their business, and they extended their hours, and they kind of shifted their concept as a business. And it's, you know, they've been much better, and it's been, you know, things have been going, we sell more beer over there.
I've heard they're doing very well now.
Right. And I'm not trying to say anything bad about anybody, but I think you should take nothing for granted. You have to evolve and adapt.
No, I agree. They you know, and a lot of taverns are suffering in Chicago because people expect food now. And under Mayor Daley, he was closing taverns, and he wasn't issuing liquor licenses unless they were incidental liquor licenses that included a restaurant. So in doing that, he got Chicagoans used to eating and drinking in the same place where they used to go to a restaurant and then go to a bar, you know, so he changed people's habits, and businesses had to change with that to survive. What I'm talking about is tide houses. You know,
sure.
Do we think tide houses are a good idea?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what's going to be happening. That's what these new taproom laws are going to allow, basically, under everyone's noses. And that's, you know, that's basically what you guys own and operate, are tide houses. You know, I know everyone is still calling them taprooms, but if the only difference between them and a bar is having liquor, you know, it's not a big difference.
Sure.
Well, and I would say that, you know, the interesting
big difference for me, though, because I, you know, I like my shots.
You're right. Well, and also the difference will be, it's one thing to, and I still think it's impactful, as we've discussed in the past, to have a place where you serve at your own establishment. But as soon as, I mean, this will especially be true if Half Acre or these other breweries ever open a third location in Hyde Park that is just has a five, barrel system that has a brewery, you know, then you're really getting into that conversation where it's effectively.
Well, I think that's what Mike Roper was kind of claiming, that is what Jolly Pumpkin is
doing. Right.
He said they're not producing a lot of beer there.
Sure.
I can tell you I'm being out of stock to Jolly Pumpkin beer, and I wonder if it isn't all going to their brew pub in Hyde Park. You know, we actually just dropped them off the menu because we couldn't get it in. So, that is the kind of thing that I think might occur. And you know, when you write these laws, people, it's lawyers' jobs to exploit those laws. You know, I mean, that's what they do. So you can have intentions in those laws, and I think all the intentions are very good, but that won't stop people from exploiting them.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think with our tap room, just the same as like when we changed the law to where we could sell beer and growlers to go for people to take, and cans as mm-hmm. well, produced yeah. on site. You know, if people come to the brewery, we're coming to the brewery for years, and we could give them a 1 ounce sample and say, here you go, try this. This is as much of the half acre experience as we can legally give you right now. But please check out all these bars in the community where you can go drink a pint. And, you know, with our tap rooms opening up, I think we're finally able to expand our business from just producing beer to actually, you know, giving people a full experience of like what we are, what we do, what sets us apart from other breweries. That was our intention entirely. It was never like, hey, right, let's do it so we can put Joe's Bar down the right. street out of business because right. we hate those guys. It's like the exact opposite. You know, we had to just turn so much away for such a long time. I think that, you know, it's just nice. You know, people want to hang out and experience the vibe of what we do, what we are, and what we do.
No, no doubt. No doubt. And, we made it clear on the podcast with Mike that I don't think any of this was done in bad intentions. I'm just pointing out the effects of it all, you know?
Yeah.
And, the three-tiered system was designed for just that, to keep you guys sure. from exploiting the other aspects of it.
But, you know, I don't know. I'm just thinking about this now. You know, you've got, let's say, 100 years ago or 80 years ago, there was not that many people producing beer at the time. So the tight houses were like kind of the norm, but it got to the point where, like, you know, there was with the tight houses, like, you know, these places only carry these beers, and it definitely blocked competition. I think that now that there's a lot more people producing beer, that's the tight houses can definitely exist, well, but is it going to happen at the expense of, like,
I think there were a lot more people producing beer pre-prohibition than there were up until 10 years ago.
Right.
You know, sure. the three-tiered system did not produce a wide variety of beer. In fact, it right. had the opposite effect.
Sure.
For whatever reasons, you know, a whole nother podcast. But, you know, we ended up with basically, you know, three breweries.
Making, you know, two kinds of beer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Regular and light.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know. I don't know. It's, you know, I think people just need to realize and react to it and, you know, plan on putting a brewery in your new bar, I guess. And all the breweries go, oh, another brewery's opening, you know? And we all go, oh, another tap room's opening.
I'm like, sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we've beaten that horse to death, possibly. Although I will mention that Ballast Point are on their way to come talk to me. Yeah.
That's good.
They heard that podcast.
And they're coming to pay their respects one way or another.
Yeah, I guess. Well, you know, in fairness to them, they want to meet it head on. And, you know, I'm more than happy to talk to them.
Yeah. I mean, it's really complicated. I had never... And I've been doing this, the sales part of my job for 5 years now. And next week's my last week. I'm transitioning to a different role at Half Acre. And up until about a month ago, this had never been a conversation that, mm-hmm. that I had had. And you brought, Pat, on the podcast you did with Mike Roper, you mentioned mm-hmm. our conversation that we had at yes. Patty Long's about
Delilah's, just the day before that. Yeah.
Yeah. Delilah's being upset about our pricing. And I just had never, that never really like occurred to me. I was like, I thought being local was good. And I never really looked, and I'm being completely honest, I never looked at any bar as competition for our tap room or as like us taking business away from anybody ever. And that was really hard. That was really a tough pill for me to swallow because I care so much and have, you know, valued all the relationships I've built in the industry over the past 5 years, that was like a completely foreign concept to me of people being like, well, you know, you guys are busy all the time and that's means less people come here. And in my mind, I was like, I don't think that people are going to our tap room and expecting the same experiences they're going to have at Delilah's. You know, I think that they're very different. And I would think that people understand why the pricing is a little different. With that being said, like, we adjusted our pricing to where we would not be undercutting anybody ever. And, you know, I always thought that local was a good thing, but I guess, It's just like all of everything we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's complicated.
It is complicated.
It's like not it's compl- that well, simple and surface well, level.
You know, once you guys start curling in your beer garden, then we're going to have problems. Then it's go time.
I just bocce. We're just doing bocce there.
God damn it.
I see Pat Berger in like, just like black, like a black ninja suit out there, just trying to like destroy stuff. You're like, who is that guy? Is that
someone broke in with a pickaxe and ruined our curling court? A very large man.
Why did he take a dump right there? No, I'm just kidding. I will say, as a beer tour, I love you both. I love tap rooms. I love bars. I just want to take a neutral. I'm the Switzerland of this argument.
I don't think it's anything like that.
No, I don't think it is. Yeah. I love tap rooms. I've been to all of them. Yeah, I go to them all the time. I love them as well. So it's it is complicated.
Yeah,
it's complicated. Very much so. Yeah, it's
a loving, complicated relationship.
Yeah, it's challenging.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right. I think it is time for shameless plugs. We will start with our esteemed guest, Eric. What is going on at Half Acre? What can we expect? What's some new releases? What's going on?
Yeah, well, I think we've been putting a new beer out about once a week in cans. So we've got the beer we're drinking now. By the time this airs, it will likely be sold out. But we made a few beers with our friends at Tired Hands. We did a quadruple IPA, our first foray into that style.
I feel like you guys say that every time you come out with an IPA. This is our first IPA.
It's our first quadruple IPA.
When are they? What's a?
Is that
what's
a style?
It's going to be like a five. What's a five? Not a quad. What would it be?
Quinn? I don't know.
Quinn IPA?
Penta? I don't know.
It's like, reminds me of an old Onion article when the Mach 4 came out. They're like, fuck it, we're going to five blades. You know?
And then someone did.
Yeah. And then somebody
did. Yeah. Mach 5. Yeah. Fusion. weird style. Stop by either tap room, drink our beer in local bars as well, and restaurants throughout the city. My new role, I'm working on producing events for Half Acre. So we'll be doing the Big North Volume 3 this year on August 18th and a yet to be announced invitational event in Chicago later in the year that I'm very excited to talk about at a future date, but it's going to be a good time.
Sweet. Don't worry. No one's listening. Just tell us. Hey. No. All right, Chris, what's going on with the beer tours? We had a good one at Patty's last week.
Oh yeah, man. Thanks as always for having us in. Love coming in and doing the, I mean, the beer and bacon flight still blows people's minds. It still blows my mind, and I've done it a lot.
It's bacon.
You just don't necessarily think until it happens that beer and bacon go as well as they do together.
It's crazy, right?
It is just
smoked, salted, cured pork and beer.
Yeah, and you can really adjust.
How do you go wrong?
Yeah, and you know, you can't really screw it up, but you can certainly make certain pairings, I would say, better than if you did it at random.
You can, right?
So, like, you know,
but you can't fuck it up. You really can't.
You can't. That's the beauty of it. Yeah, that's the beauty of it. Yeah. So, that always. But yeah, we're touring on all three tours. I've made some new tour guide hires, so we're doing some training, and they're all just super pumped, great people, real excited, a lot of beer knowledge, and we'll be discovering Chicago through history and beer. So that's, how about you?
I'm just gearing up for Saturday, big game against your Wolverines. funny enough, we'd already scheduled the KBS, the Founders KBS release that night. So it's going to be quadruple crazy.
Nice.
Thank you.
Love it.
Thank you. it should be pretty nuts because I think the game tips off at 5 and then 7 o'clock we're releasing KBS. And we have a keg of Canadian breakfast out as pretty fargin' good.
I might have to go up there and black out depending on how the game goes on.
Sorry, I think either way, you could have an excuse for it.
Yeah. So, great.
So that's what's going on here. This is the last weekend of curling at Kaiser Tiger. We are tearing down the courts on Monday, the rinks, the sheets, whatever they're called. And then we're installing heaters in the beer garden here at Kaiser. So we will hopefully by the end of April, we will have a heated beer garden for everyone
Sweet.
To
And
enjoy.
Bocce. Bocce's coming, right?
Bocce is open now, actually.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
So, yeah, everything is moving swimmingly. I had a meeting with Pilsner Kell about some unfiltered kegs yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
So I should have some details on that very soon. Probably in April, we will have unfiltered Pilsner Kell at both bars. And I'm sure they'll be opening their tap room any day. Serving unfiltered Pilsner Kell all
the
want.
Time. Then, I think in the West Loop. I think.
Yeah, $3 a pint, too.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to Brian. We were talking about it yesterday when I was explaining the new law. He was like, oh, that's interesting. Maybe I'll talk to my bosses about it. Damn it. I got to stop talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I was telling all these breweries forever, like, well, you better open a tap room, man. You know, you got to open a tap room. And now here I am going, hey, these tap rooms are bullshit.
Yeah. Close them down.
I'm an idiot. All right. Thank you to everyone who is listening. And please write a review again.
Reviews are super helpful. We really appreciate it. Tell your friends. Tell your family.
Write a review. Unless you didn't like us, then keep that shit to yourself.
Yeah. Or write a positive review anyway, out of the kindness of your heart.
It's the internet. You don't have to tell the truth.
Yeah.
And thanks you again. Once again, beeropinions.co.
Rock and roll.
Cheers.